This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
OG, I know you're already a member, but I wonder if the rest of our audience knows that becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you save and earn more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you could start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal's savings option for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project, maybe you want to consolidate debt. You could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed-rate home equity loan with zero closing costs, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Both options could help make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.
Take a deep breath. Relax. Inhale through your nose and exhale through your mouth. Sit back and close your eyes. Gradually release the tension, starting from your toes, working up your legs to your pelvis, and from your fingertips, slowly up your arms to your shoulders. The Stacking Benjamins Show, no matter how bad it gets, is your favorite podcast. I will count backwards from three, and when I snap my fingers, you'll be overcome with delight at hearing the start of this episode. 3, 2, 1.
Live from the place where the ice cream's cold and the furnace is hot, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey there, money fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we've got a crazy good show for you today. We'll tackle fiduciary rules being rolled out more slowly than originally thought. Does that change your retirement planning? We'll also talk insurance. If you rent a car, schedule a trip, or buy the new $1,000 iPhone, should you also spring for the insurance? Plus, we'll take a call from a lucky listener and actually open some mail from the mailbag. Here to help us on today's show, from Your Richest Life Planning, certified financial planner, Katie Brewer. From LenPenzo.com, it's Kate Upton. I'm kidding. She's busy getting married and honeymooning and all that sort of thing. So instead, we pulled in Len Penzo. And rounding out our team from Afford Anything, Paula Pant. Plus, we'll introduce you to Pluto Money with Tim Yu. And here he is, the guy whose mom wonders when he's going to get a real job, Joe Salcihi.
This is a real job. I'm going to continually say it's a real job until it becomes one. Hey, everybody. I am Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter, and here to help me with this here Friday show on my right, all the way from Las Vegas or wherever the heck she's visiting lately, it's Paula Pant.
You know, you got me in the 48 hours that I'm back in Vegas in between. I flew home from Seattle yesterday, and I'm flying to Denver in 2 days from now.
Is a term for somebody like you, jet setter? Is that what we call you, a jet setter?
I suppose so, although I have neither taken off nor set down any jets.
Well, tomorrow's a good day to start then. because Jet Setter seems a lot like you. And across the table from you to my left, Mr. Len Penzo joins us.
Hey, Paula, can I borrow some of your air miles? I've got a threatening letter from one of the airlines because I'm about to fall out of gold status and I need some miles quick.
Oh, is it American Airlines? Because I'm about
to
lose.
Yes!
They completely changed their gold status policy and they're screwing over their most loyal customers.
I'm going to be a victim very soon here.
Well, here's the deal, Paula. It has nothing to do with like when he gets on the airplane. It's gold status. Len Penzo wants gold status.
Oh.
Yeah, but I want gold status too, Joe. Right? I do want my gold status.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be either or, right?
Hey, it is such a perk to get on that plane at a point where you still have overhead space for your carry-ons.
We can talk about that later. I'm wondering why we couldn't get Kate Upton instead of you on the show. I want to go back to what Doug said in his introduction.
Yeah, I'm wondering that too.
I know, really. Easier for you. And wondering what the heck she's doing here. Across the card table from me, our very special guest. Actually, do we even call her special guest anymore? She's on the show at least once a quarter. Certified financial planner Katie Brewer joins us.
Hello. You may still call me a special guest.
How about most special guest?
Yeah. Most special guest, Katie Brewer.
Fantastic. For people that haven't heard you on the show before, tell us a little bit about Your Richest Life Planning.
Yeah, I'm a certified financial planner over in the Dallas area. I work with a lot of folks that are Gen X, Gen Y. If you don't know which gen you are, that's essentially people under 55. That's about it. That's all you need to know.
Len thought you said Jen, not Jen.
Yeah, all ladies named Jen.
He was like, oh, I'm all about Jen. You know what else, Len? Len, when's the last time you had a good night's sleep?
Not in a long time, Joe.
Well, I got a deal.
You know what? Because I stress over every time I'm on this show.
I bet you do. Well, he's been stressing since 3 minutes before we hit record. Right. This episode of Stacky Benjamin's Len Penzo is brought to you by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Len Penzo, you can get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/stacking and use promo code stacking at checkout. How about that?
I'm going to stacking at checkout. That is a big long promo code, but I will put it in.
No, you just put in stacking. You don't have to put stacking at checkout.
Oh, well, then why'd you say that?
I don't know. But this is also brought to you by MagnifyMoney.com. Moving on. Magnify Money, the average person saves $450 when they go there because they find out that at their bank, they don't have the right checking account, savings account, those tools they use every day. The ones that they use, this is what bothers me, Paula Pant, is people get so worried about their little things in life, they can't focus. They can't focus on the big things. And you got to focus on the big things, Paula.
I am so worried about losing gold status on American Airlines next year.
That's right.
I can't even focus on how to pronounce the word focus.
If you go to magnifymoney.com, stackybenjamins.com/magnifymoney, you can make sure you got all the right stuff there and you're not worried about that. And all you can think about all day long is gold status. How about that?
That's exactly what I do all day anyway.
We got an amazing show for you today, guys. We've got Tim Yu from Pluto. We'll tell you all about Pluto and gamifying your financial picture. But first, we got some headlines, so let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now, it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
First headline comes to us from Investment News, an industry news rag for financial planners. Where all the cool financial planners hang out, right, Katie? You hang out at Investment News all the time?
Yep. I do. This online and investment news.
This is written by Greg Iacurci. Says retirement plan advisors, providers hit pause on the Department of Labor fiduciary rule compliance. Trump administration review is prompting some retirement plan specialists to hold back on implementing parts of the rule that are vague or challenging. Katie, I think I'll have you kind of define this for us. So there's this rule about people being a fiduciary. What's that all about?
The F word, fiduciary. The last administration put into effect or partial effect something that was to say that anybody dealing with retirement accounts was going to have to act as a fiduciary, which means they were going to have to act in the client's best interests. So that was all passed a few years ago. Essentially, Trump rolled back or is talking about rolling back part of that legislation so that it doesn't start for a couple of years.
But define for people, though, Katie, what a fiduciary really is. What does that mean?
Yeah. So essentially a fiduciary does mean acting in a client's best interest. So if there's a conflict of interest, you're required to disclose your conflicts of interest, and then you're required to act in somebody's best interest. It essentially means that if you do something that's not in someone's best interest, that you can be sued more easily.
Paula, do you know much about this rule? Anything going on with this rule?
As a general member of the public, what I know is that if I were to go to an advisor, I would only want somebody who has a fiduciary duty to me. As far as how that gets implemented, that's not my job.
But yeah, but does that have anything to do with this rule, or you just know that in general as a member of the public?
I know that in general as a member of the public, but I should give the asterisk here that I know that as an extremely nerdy member of the public who has spent the last several years reading about personal finance every single day. A normal member of the public, somebody who is not as nerdy as me, I don't think would know anything about this.
Len, do you know anything about this rule?
Well, like Paula, I knew that a fiduciary was supposed to act in our best interest, not in theirs. For example, I knew that if they had a large holding in a certain stock and they were going to recommend that stock to me, they would also have to disclose, and correct me if I'm wrong, Katie, they would have to disclose that they own shares, significant shares of that stock too, right? So that I, can make my own decision whether they're biased or they're trying to steer me to something for their own best interest. So...
Yeah, Katie, that's true, isn't it?
Are you guys going to make me look up the word fiduciary because I'm doing it?
So Len, my understanding of it actually, here's the two members of the general public talking. My understanding of it is that a fiduciary would not recommend that stock to you unless the fiduciary truly believed that that stock was in your own best interest.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, they have to completely believe that it's the right thing for you. And I guess what worries me then, Paula, if you've got this understanding of this, I feel like this is a big deal. This rule being scaled back is kind of a big deal. And yet, we kind of struggle as a public to even understand what the hell's going on.
Oh, yeah. I think lack of financial education generally is one of the big problems in our society. And one expression of that lack of general financial education is that the general public does not know when they are approached by a broker or an investment advisor or an investment broker or a mortgage broker. There are all these different designations and different titles and different roles. The general public does not know what the differences between all of those roles and normal member of the general public would not even know to ask the question, do you have a fiduciary duty to me or not? That's a problem.
Now, I think that's a huge problem. Katie, have you met with people before that kind of got burned by somebody not being a fiduciary instead being a salesperson?
Yeah, unfortunately. I guess this comes along with being a fee-only financial planner. Sometimes people have gone out and tried out somebody else who said they were a financial planner or said they were a financial advisor, ended up being somebody who sold them usually a product where there's a really big commission and it's hard to get out of it. And then that person decided, maybe this advisor doesn't have my best interests in heart. And I hate seeing those stories over and over again, but it feels like that's kind of what pushes somebody to go find a fee-only financial planner sometimes.
Well, and I love the idea of a fee-only financial planner, and I love the idea of a fiduciary because of the fact that they have to work in your best interest. But man, I've known some fee-only financial planners, and I think you do too, Katie, where they were complete morons. And I've known some commission salespeople that I would send my mother to because they wouldn't do anything unless they thought it was right anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, there's never like a right for anything or a wrong for anything. I mean, here in the Dallas area, I wouldn't say there's financial planners that are fee only that are morons, but I would say that a lot of them will only work with you if you have $1 million or more. So it kind of cuts out a lot of the general population who might want to work with those people in the first place.
Well, and that's the problem, Len, is that what a lot of people that are against this fiduciary legislation say is that the little guy, to Katie's point, the little guy's not going to get serviced anymore unless they've got a bundle of money. Well, and then they're not a little guy.
Yeah, it's true, Joe. And I don't know what more to add to this other than to say these rules, I still am not clear, and maybe you can help me. I am not clear. What is the new rule? I mean, weren't these rules have always been in place, haven't they?
No,
don't understand.
The new rule is if you serve someone's retirement plan, and it's not in effect yet, but if you serve someone's retirement plan, if you help them with their 401k, with their IRA, you have to act in a fiduciary capacity. So if you're advising them on retirement, it's going to be specifically that area. You have to act as a fiduciary.
Wow, that was not always the case.
Isn't that funny? It has never been the case, and it still isn't the case, which is why so many annuities get sold. I mean, don't get me wrong, annuities can be good for the right person, but so many annuities get sold, and annuities inside a retirement plan, don't get me started on a variable annuity inside a retirement plan. You've got a tax shelter inside a tax shelter. Like, why do
But there's so many tax shelters, Joe. It's so great.
Yeah, if I can have my tax shelter inside my tax shelter, that would be fantastic. How do I get that? And yet annuities, a few years ago at least, the last time I saw the statistic, were the number one thing that people had inside of their retirement plans. And it was worthless.
So what you're saying now is if the annuity salesman, if this law goes through and the guy who's selling the annuities, he can't just say, okay, here's the annuity and here's how much you're going to pay and here's how much you're going to earn over time. Now he's going to say, but there are alternatives as well that you might want to consider, right? Isn't that right?
Well, I don't know. Katie, do you know what kind of where the line is there? I don't think there's alternative. I think that if he doesn't believe in his heart that the annuity is the right thing, he can't do it.
So does that mean that there will be no salespeople within the entire retirement industry?
No salespeople that won't be able to at least give you all the options, alternatives.
But I think that in order to be a fiduciary, you like the nature of the idea behind a fiduciary is inherently not sales. A fiduciary would advise you and guide you and then mentor you, be that big brother, not a salesperson. So if you are a salesperson and your loyalty is to ship X number of widgets for a company, that seems to be inherently incompatible with what a fiduciary is.
Absolutely. And which is why annuity companies are afraid that they're going to take it on the chin. And you've seen a lot of pushback from those types of companies because of that.
If you guys are ever interested in looking into it more, look up suitability versus fiduciary. There's a lot of big words, but essentially the broker community, a lot of them are still under suitability rules, which just means that whatever they sell a client has to be deemed as suitable, which leaves a lot of it in a very gray area, as I've seen some things pass suitability that I'm looking at it and I'm going, how in the heck did the compliance person sign off on that?
Yeah, the suitability rule, basically, it doesn't say do the right thing. It says don't do the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm. Don't do something that's too wrong.
Right. Well, it's almost like with the doctor, do no harm first, right? Do no harm. And I don't know, we could debate. where that gray area is a lot. I'll link to this. Obviously, we're not going to solve the problem of the fiduciary rule, but it does scare me. The reason I brought it up today is because so few people even understand that there is a rule and that, surprise, surprise, Mr. Penzo, the person who's advising you on your 401k does not have to be a fiduciary the way the rule is now.
I'm really shocked. I am shocked at that. I had no idea.
But Len's been on the show, Paula, for 5 years. He finally learned something.
Today.
Don't worry. I'll forget it by tomorrow, Joe.
thank you. Yeah, you don't want to ruin our reputation. No. Our next piece comes to us from Money-ish, one of my favorite lightweight blogs. Nicole Impesci wrote this piece. Here's two more reasons to pay the extra $200 to insure the $1,000 plus iPhone X. It says Apple's most expensive iPhone ever, running $999 to $1,149, is also the, quote, most breakable iPhone yet, according to a new SquareTrade drop test. SquareTrade, which it should be noted, sells mobile device protection plans, of course, put the 10th anniversary iPhone through its paces, including dropping it from 6 feet so it landed on its face, its back and its side, a tumble test, bouncing it around in a washer-dryer style tumble for 60 seconds, dunking it in water for 30 minutes, and simulating it falling from the top of a car as the vehicle drives away. I want this job, by the way. How fun would that job be?
What about the microwave test?
Have you stuck your iPhone in microwave, Katie?
I would if I worked for this testing company.
Yeah, I thought there was a story there, like one of your kids did it or something. But listen, you know, it's funny, this insurance, Len, $200, 20% of the price to insure your iPhone, 20% of the price. Do you buy this insurance or are you extra careful with your iPhone?
First off, I think this is showing a problem with these $1,000 phones now. I think it's a problem all in and of itself. You know, I did my own article on this a few years ago on whether cell phone insurance was worth it. And I laid out all the numbers and I got all the Excel spreadsheets. And I found that for cell phone insurance, if something breaks early on, as soon as you buy it, within a few months, it's obviously you're going to make some, it's going to pay off. But the longer you have that phone, the less chance of you getting your money back. And eventually you end up losing money on it. Now, this might seem intuitive to most people, but most people don't do this math and find and they don't know for themselves. But to me, it's worth the risk to just roll the dice. It's just the price is just too much for the risk.
Be super careful for the first 8 months and then wing it.
And then, yes, and then wing it. There you go.
Paula, what do you think?
So there's one particular sentence in here that I think encapsulates the decision perfectly. So it says, considering that AppleCare Plus costs $199 and you still have to pay $29 to fix your screen on top of that, which is the copay, then a single repair would cost you $228, which is only $51 less than the $279 you'd pay out of pocket without the insurance. So in other words, if you buy the insurance, you have to break your phone at least twice for it to pay off.
When do you, well, and that seems like a drop the mic. So if Steve Stewart can give us a drop the mic after that.
And is the mic insured?
Right. Because if so, we need to drop it twice to make money on it. Katie, but this isn't the only place where we have insurance, not just on phones. I mean, people buy insurance on trips. I just booked a flight to Seattle, and I also booked a concert. And even the concert that I booked on Ticketmaster had concert insurance. Where do you draw the line on when to buy insurance and when to say no thank you?
Well, I think on this one particularly, in the article, they mentioned that you should probably put one of those ugly freaking silicone cases right. and one of those break-proof screen protectors on. And that's what I've always done. I'm a big fan of OtterBox. Shout out. Woot, woot.
Me too. Because I'm super clumsy, and that solved everything for me.
My family, too.
I am. It bounces off the ground just like a rubber ball. And I'm like, all right, yet another accidental dropping of the phone. It bounced three times and didn't crack.
Thank you, OtterBox. But what about other insurances? Do you buy trip insurance or do you buy concert insurance?
What's funny is I've never bought trip insurance before, and it's never been a problem. And this past time, I really messed up and checked everybody else's passports, forgot to check my passport. It apparently expired. My husband and my daughter went on a fabulous trip to the Dominican Republic. And apparently, if I had bought trip insurance, I would have had a lot easier time rebooking everything.
Oh, man.
I've never bought trip insurance, but I may be looking into that in the future just because I messed my last vacation up. Wah, wah.
But Paula, Greg had that with a big trip. And after hearing Greg's story, and Greg's not here to defend himself, but Greg had a trip planned to Australia and ended up the very first leg of his trip got canceled. And then that, you know, that ruined everything else down the line. And he says that he should have bought insurance. But when it comes to trips, it seems like those really expensive trips is where it's worth it.
My general rule of thumb is that if you can self-insure, meaning that, I see risk equals probability times magnitude, right? So if the magnitude is low enough that you could reasonably pay for the cost of those repercussions out of pocket, then over the long term, it's cheaper to not buy the insurance. But if the magnitude is so great that there's no way you could reasonably self-insure, then in those cases, it makes sense to have insurance. So it makes sense to have, for example, health insurance for major catastrophes like a cancer diagnosis or getting hit by a bus. But it doesn't necessarily make sense to pay a huge premium for having, say, a $500 deductible instead of a $5,000 deductible.
Yeah. Len, where do you draw the line?
First off, I'm very impressed with Paula. She's basically part of engineering is it's all about managing risk. And what you're really doing is Paula's described something called a risk cube, where it's consequence versus probability of occurrence. And I won't get too technical, but you're right, Paula. You got to measure those two together. And then you have to decide how much you're willing to buy down that risk. And again, in most cases, insurance, the probability or the consequence or the probability combined does not make it worth the amount of the insurance. Think about it. These insurance companies are in business because most of the time these bad events don't happen, right? So everybody has a bad story, but in the aggregate, the chance of these things happening to you are really quite slim. So to me, Joe, to answer your question, I really don't buy insurance for anything except my home and my car and my life and that's about it.
Yeah, I buy insurance mostly where I have a big Achilles heel, to Paula's point about self-insurance. If I have a big Achilles heel and I can't cover it myself, and the cost of that coverage is fairly high. So as an example, disability coverage is high for a reason. That's because, Len, the probability of it happening to me are much better than I want to believe that it is. So,
there you go.
So I'm going to cover the places. And it's funny because most people, Katie, you'll see this in your practice, I'm sure. People don't want to cover the stuff that's expensive, but if the insurance is cheap, they're more than happy to go buy it.
Yeah. Luckily, they've got me to tell them that accidental death and dismemberment has a very, very, very small chance of paying out. So we probably should quit paying for that, even though they offer it through the employer.
Yeah.
Hey, Jill, let me give one example of when I did buy it. I actually did buy cell phone insurance very early on when my kids were young. Why was that? Because the probability of them screwing up and dropping that phone or
very high.
It was high. Yes. So I did buy it, and actually it paid off. So, you know. You've got to weigh the risk. You've got to weigh the probability of the occurrence versus what are the consequences of that occurrence happening.
So I think our lessons today from the headline, lesson number one is realize that if you have an advisor, you need to ask if they are actually a fiduciary in your corner, because surprise, surprise, they don't have to be, and they might not be. They might be working under just suitability rules. And then the second takeaway, I think, is when it comes to insurance, look at the risk of something happening versus the cost, and weigh that carefully before you buy. All right, upstairs talking to Mom is Tim Yu. You know, when I first heard about Pluto, it's really cool because life is a series of challenges, isn't it? And when I heard that Pluto helps people turn your financial goals into these easy to set up challenges in this app, this whole idea of gamifying your money is really interesting to me. Paula, I was going to ask you about that, actually. Do you seem like somebody that would gamify your entire life?
First of all, when you said Pluto, I thought you were referring to the planet, and I got extremely confused. I mean, sorry, the former planet.
This is that, the planet formerly known as Pluto, right?
Secondly, gamifying, I actually have not done very much on that front, largely because I like the simple and automated approach to managing money. So I'll set up the systems once and then forget about it.
Katie, I find it annoying when people like Paul are self-motivated.
God, these self-motivated people.
I know.
Just stick with it and do the thing.
I know. Isn't that annoying, Paula? You were going to say, say something else?
The thing is, I don't actually do anything because it's automated. So, you know, once a year, twice a year, I'll check in on stuff. But twice a year, I check in on stuff. I check my net worth twice a year. And at that point, I log into every account. Other than that, I don't really deal with it that much.
Well, there's Paula. And then for the rest of us, I want to introduce you to Tim Yu, because he is the CEO and one of the founders of Pluto, founded GoPluto.io. Help me welcome, come down to the basement, Mr. Tim Yu. And coming down the stairs, he's got the new hot product online from Pluto. It's Tim Yu. Have a seat, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Well, you got to be relieved that the launch went well, and you guys are up and rolling.
Yeah, definitely really exciting to finally get out of invite only and, you know, let anyone that wants access to it get access to it.
Well, and before we get into Pluto and exactly what you guys do, did you create this, Tim, because of like a frustration on your end, or was it you saw an opportunity, nobody was doing something? Tell me about your origin story.
Yeah, definitely. So first of all, my co-founder, Susie, and I, we met during our junior year at UCLA about 3 years ago. And during that summer, we both struggled to manage our money in very different ways. So I interned at Expedia, and it was my first time living in a new state that's not California and making a lot of money for a college student. And so I quickly started to spend $30 on dinner every day, like I was Bill Gates. Right. And by the end of summer, I just realized I barely had anything saved. And around the same time, Susie got accepted to her dream arts and language program in Europe, but she ended up having to give that up because she felt like she just didn't have enough money, and it made her feel just financially insecure. So we tried a lot of existing financial tools, talked to hundreds of our peers, and we realized a couple of big things. So existing solutions like Mint, they just simply didn't get our mindset about money, and they didn't really make personal financial management approachable for financial novices like college students and a lot of people that aren't college students too. And unsurprisingly, a lot of college students, 70% actually, according to research, are financially stressed. And so many of them just end up doing nothing about their finances. So I studied cognitive science at UCLA, and we really wanted to leverage behavioral science along with data science and actionability to reimagine the money management experience for the Snapchat generation.
Yeah, and you certainly have done that. By the way, when you talk about eating like Bill Gates, does that mean you had lots of kale and tons of...
Well, a little more unhealthy than that, unfortunately, but...
Bill Gates is a college student.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I felt like, at least.
Yeah, that's good. So walk us through it. What do people get when they go to gopluto.io?
Yeah, so you can download the app on that website. It's available only on iOS for now. We are thinking about you Android users, but you know, we're taking it one at a time. Basically, our app, we guide and empower the Snapchat generation to achieve that sweet balance between their everyday spending and their saving goals in these small attainable increments. So you can easily reach your saving goals by doing these simple gamified challenges that are tailored to your finances.
Okay, so I'm giving myself a challenge when I use Pluto. Okay.
Yeah. So I can kind of walk you through from the very beginning to end kind of how it works. So the first thing we do is to guide our users to create these near-term saving goals, whether it be for a wish list, a bucket list, or our favorite adulting. Not really our favorite, but...
Right. No, I see. No. I see one of those, Tim. Spend less on drinking.
Yeah, there you go. That's what's important for us, right? So, you know, we really strongly believe that you'll be more successful and motivated if you have these tangible, achievable goals that you care about. So, you know, when you're in college, you're probably not thinking about retiring yet. And also doing it because managing money because your parents told you to or your friends are doing it isn't really going to cut it for you. And so after you set a goal, our users, they securely link their bank accounts. And so we're able to analyze their finances and identify these saving opportunities for them with an initial focus on spending. So we turn those opportunities into these simple challenges you can take, like spend less on Uber this week. And then we tie those actions to a goal. So for example, we can tell you that you spend an average of $30 on Uber each week. So this week, you take a spend less on Uber challenge. Whatever you spend under that $30 can be automatically saved towards your goal. So if you spend only $10 on that this week, that's $20 saved towards a spring break trip. So it's really the power of trade-offs, which we think is what money management is ultimately about.
So if I spend $20 less on Uber, does that get moved out of my account into a different savings account?
Yeah, so we're actually working on money movement right now. For right now, it's virtual, but that's one of our top priorities.
Yeah, awesome. And how many goals can I have set at one time?
You can have as many as you want, but we do kind of recommend you to have no more than three.
Sure.
You know, to really focus on the ones that matter to you.
So that's if I spend less then. Tell me about a challenge like saving more. Like you've got a savings, you got one here for tech gadgets, let's say. These are just examples that are rotating on your website. Or saving more to go to a concert. If I'm doing that, what happens?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we actually have a lot of exciting challenges on a roadmap. If you can imagine, there's a lot of different challenges that users can do. So saving certain percentages of your paycheck, saving on a regular basis, canceling subscriptions, even contextual challenges like we might know that you take Ubers on a Monday and challenge you to not spend on Uber that Monday and to save instead. So those are all things on our roadmap. Right now, we focus on just spending less on, you know, a lot of different categories and any merchants that you have.
Gotcha.
And we tie those to your goals.
It seems like it doesn't take that long to set it up. When I set mine up, it seemed to go very, very quickly.
Yeah, so we try to really make the experience as easy as possible. It's pretty straightforward. It's just really simple. You know, you just create a goal and then we give you steps that you can take to reach that goal and then you take it.
Whenever you talk about linking your accounts, linking any bank account, people worry about security, Tim. Tell me about the security with Pluto.
Yeah, so we actually partner with Plaid, which is one of the, you know, it's partnered with a lot of, you know, really popular apps like Robinhood, Venmo, et cetera. And so we also have our own security measures in place. We take it really seriously. Right now, users can't actually move money with Pluto. But once we do that, we will make sure, you know, to be with a FDIC insured banking partner. But right now, we don't have any access to our users' login credentials. That's not stored on our servers. And so fear not, your bank account will not get hacked through Pluto.
Yeah. And then making money. This is a free app, right?
Yes, it is. We really believe that personal finance tools should be accessible to anyone.
And then, so how do you guys plan to make money in the future?
Yeah, so we plan to recommend very tailored financial products and saving opportunities from merchants and lenders that can help our users reach their saving goals faster and spend less. So these will be based on the goals and challenges that they have and also other information they willingly provide us. So for example, we're not going to recommend opening up retirement accounts when our user is still in college because that likely doesn't align with their priorities. Now, if we see that a user has goals to pay off, to pay off student loan or save for a vacation, we can recommend refinancing options to them or also a credit card with great travel reward points. So when they follow through on those, that's where we make money.
Gotcha. Okay. And it's cool. I think this whole, just to broaden it out for a second, I think this whole idea of gamifying your goals is pretty exciting. How did you initially conceptualize that this was this a part of, you know, when you talked about behavioral finance, is that why people are so excited about the app?
It is. I can go in a little bit back to what I said before about existing tools. Yeah. You see all these budgeting tools, you know, you set a ton of budgets and most of the times they break, people just forget about them because there's so many, it's just really complicated. And what we found is that, you know, that's just not natural. What people really think about is like, okay, shoot, I spent too much money on eating out last week. I need to spend less on that this week. So it's really breaking it down into these achievable steps, the shorter time frame, you know, like making it tangible, like a month or a week, even a day. But we found week to be kind of like the most optimal time frame for a lot of these younger millennials. And so the idea of taking away the term budget and turning it into a challenge just really makes it more kind of like a game, like kind of more exciting and fun. It's like, you know, something a lot more, you know, something you want to do. And so that's what we found people had reacted to really well.
Well, and then it's positive too. I mean, if I save, let's say if I save $3 on Uber or $15 on Uber, both ways is a win.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like you completed a challenge as opposed to, oh, you came under your budget or you blew past your budget.
Yeah, right, right. I love this idea of challenging yourself. And when people look it up, I notice there are a couple other Pluto apps out there that have nothing to do with finance. Is there something, do I put Pluto money in? Like, what do I put to make sure I get right to the right Pluto?
Yeah. I mean, there's the planet. Well, we still think it's a planet, dwarf planet, I guess. Right. There's that planet. But yes, if you want to, you know, really get Pluto down in the first search result, type in Pluto money.
Gotcha. Awesome. And any idea when those Android people might be looking out for you? Maybe a year from now, 6 months from now? What are you thinking?
Well, we're hoping early next year.
Okay.
But, you know, we're really focusing on iOS right now and building out the experience. We actually have, I mentioned a couple of exciting kind of new challenges we have coming out. But there's also some other exciting features. So one of the things is the peer data comparison. So we're really excited about that one. People are very social creatures. And a lot of times we just want to know how we're doing financially compared to similar peers. So, you know, are we spending below average? Are we spending kind of like a normal person, or are we spending way more than we should be? Pluto, we're all about adding meaning to your personal data, whether it's through, you know, your saving goals or the context of your peer data. And so we're actually drilling down really specific to like your gender, you know, just college campus that you're on, et cetera. Like it's really limitless what we can do with this. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah, that's really cool. Keep us apprised of all of that, Tim, because we'd love to share that with Stacky Benjamin's listeners. Tim Yu from Pluto, thanks a ton for hanging out.
Thank you.
Hey, money fans, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I've been reading, all right, I had Joe's mom read out loud to me, but that's unimportant. Anyway, she was reading me this Morningstar report about mutual fund expenses. That woman's got a voice for numbers. She knows the number zero really well. Like, when I ask how much she's going to chip in when we drive down to the Sizzler on Friday night, she said zero really loud. She's good at that. But check this out. According to Morningstar, what's the average percentage fee an investor pays in a mutual fund in the USA? I'll be back with the answer in just a moment.
Today's episode of Stacky Benjamin's brought to you by Casper. They're the sleep brand that continue to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Casper's mattresses, designed by humans for humans. They combine multiple supported memory foams for a quality sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Casper's breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the night. And they're not just a mattress company. Casper offers a wide array of products to ensure an overall better sleep experience. Of course, Casper's mattresses made in the USA. Buying a Casper's easy. Order online. It's delivered to your door in a compact box. You get free shipping and free returns to the USA and Canada. And considering we spend one third of our lives on a mattress, it's so important to truly sleep on a mattress before committing. That's why Casper gives you 100 nights to try it out. Start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper. Get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/stacking and use promo code stacking at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. That's $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/stacking. Promo code stacking at checkout. Hey, stackers, we get used to those same daily routines, don't we? Wake up at the same time every morning, brush our teeth, park the car in the same spot at work every day, recite jokes in the mirror to be funnier than that jerk at the water cooler. Or is that what just me? Here's one thing you shouldn't make routine: using the same credit card from the same bank just because that's what you've always done. Nick Clements from Magnify Money explains why.
I mean, it's never been a better time, honestly, to find a credit card, especially given the lucrative sign-on bonuses that are out there. Chase just recently had $100,000 on their Reserve card. I think we're at a point right now where credit cards are extremely profitable for large banks, and they are really wanting to get more customers. And so they're rolling out the red carpet. So I would just say, if you have had a credit card for more than 2 or 3 years, chances are there's a much better deal out there for you today.
So why stick with that same old card with those rewards that haven't changed in years? You can use MagnifyMoney.com to always find best in class, including better interest rates. And don't only use Magnify Money for credit cards. Nick and the team have built the site from the ground up to help with personal loans, student loans, and mortgages. Average person saves $450 in interest when they hit stackybenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney.
Hey there, money fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and Joe's mom had a writer friend drop by during the break. Apparently, the friends had some money trouble, but it appears she's humming along with a side writing gig to get her life back in order. Isn't that great? She didn't say she's a writer, but when she said she's working on Chapter 11, that told me everything I needed to know. Good for her to keep working hard on her book, even when the money's tight. Where was I? Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, you're a trivia. Here was the question. According to Morningstar, what's the average percentage fee an investor pays in a mutual fund in the USA? The answer? The average investor paid 0.57% in 2016, which is down from 0.61 a year earlier and 0.56 3 years ago. That's good news for investors because lower fees means more money in your pocket. Speaking of money in my pocket, I think I'll ask the writer lady if I can borrow a few bucks. I've heard those authors and podcasters make tons of money. See ya.
Might be right about authors, but I think you might be barking up the wrong tree there. Paula Pant, you're the big winner.
I'm the winner. Woohoo! I get a trip to Pluto.
Although you're going to have to catch up with Tim to get there before he leaves. But
winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Well, and Katie, you weren't that far away. You said just over 1%.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to go do my research. There must have been some of those crazy no-load funds that jumped in there since the last time I looked.
Len Penzo, you said 3%. You're from the Barnum and Bailey school of investing, where there's a sucker born every minute, apparently.
Well, I was figuring that everybody was lacking in their fiduciary duties, and they were not. Because part of your being a fiduciary is making sure that you do charge reasonable fees, correct?
Well, is 3% reasonable?
No, that's what I'm saying. I was thinking most people weren't following through on their fiduciary duties.
I gotcha. Hey, guess what, guys? We got a wrong number on my mom's voicemail. Isn't that weird? And our wrong number is brought to you by Stacky Benjamin's courses. We have a new course out called The Millionaire Money Mindset, where we'll teach all the little things that millionaires know that helps them focus on the big picture like Paula Pant does. See, we added that in. Topical, Paula. Very topical. StackyBenjamins.com/findben for that. But our new BFF called in to our wrong number. Let's say hello to Michelle.
Hello, Joe and OG. My name is Michelle, and I'm from Oklahoma. I have a 19-year-old daughter and a 17-year-old daughter. My 19-year-old daughter is already married and off to college in New York, but my 17-year-old just recently got a job, and I would like for her to start investing. I'm encouraging her to save at least 50% of each of her paychecks in a savings account, but I feel like that money could be doing more. Would an IRA be an option? And what options are there for underage children out there? What would your suggestions be? Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Michelle. And let's go right to the CFP here with this one. 17-year-old, should she put that money in an IRA, Katie?
Well, I would say she should put it in a Roth IRA because she's going to have several decades for it to grow. And if they stop screwing around with our tax rules, then she would be able to pull it out tax-free whenever she retires.
Awesome. But what if she doesn't? I mean, do you limit, Len, do you limit the money to retirement? Do you handcuff them with that as a parent?
Limit the money to retire with? Say that again.
Do you limit the money to retirement? Michelle asks if an IRA is the right answer. Katie said we could do a Roth IRA. And my question for you is, with a Roth IRA, we're now still talking about retirement, aren't we? I mean, what if 17-year-old wants to do something else?
Yes, exactly. And because my answer, maybe I was focusing too much while I was thinking, what am I going to answer? But my answer is, instead of thinking in financial terms, like how I can grow some money, a few bucks to put in, why don't you invest, have your child invest in his or herself? And what I would say is, maybe put aside some money to start a little side business. It doesn't have to be complicated, but something that, especially if the child has a hobby that they might be able to monetize and make a little money off, teach them to treat it like a business, invest in that business, and learn how to run the business. And that is some valuable skills in investing in themselves at an early age that might pay off big time later on down the road.
But Katie, back to you with this idea of and Paula will get to you in a second, but back to you, with the Roth IRA, doing what you're talking about, we've got the money invested. Len's way, there's a potential they just flush the money down the toilet.
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be an either or. And I tell a lot of my clients this because a lot of them come to me and say, do I pay off student loan debt or do I save for retirement or do I put an emergency savings in place? And I'm like, let's split it up and tackle all three of those. So, I mean, if this lady is having her daughter save 50%, which, woohoo, if you're getting a teenager to actually agree to that, good for you. But out of that 50%, she could split it up and maybe do half of it to a Roth IRA and half of it to like a fun account or an invest in yourself account or something like that.
Paula, at 17 years old, you were saving 3/4 of your income.
Well, I didn't have that high of a savings rate, but I got really excited when I heard this question because I actually opened my first investment account when I was a minor.
And was it? 18. Oh, cool. And was it an IRA?
No, it was just a traditional, a normal taxable investment account because I did not know that IRAs existed at the time. I regret that. If I could go back and do it over, I would have put it in a Roth IRA. But what I did at the time, because I didn't know that that option was on the table, I went to a company called Dodge & Cox. They have mutual funds with 0.6% expense ratios. And I opened two accounts. One was one that invested in the broad U.S. stock market and one that invested in international stocks.
Awesome.
And because I was a minor, I had to open it with, there had to be one of my parents' names on the account. So the account is actually, it's my account. It has my name on it. But then it's filed with my mom's name. They have some sort of an acronym that they use. And then my mom's name is filed like in the underneath of that.
Yeah, it's called an UGMA or an UTMA account, depending on what state you live in, which is a Uniform Gift to Minors Act or a uniform. What is it, Katie? Uniform Transfer to Minors? Uniform?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, Uniform Transfer to Minors.
Yeah.
But it was all my money. It was money that I made from working at McDonald's. So that's why I would have opened a Roth IRA because you can contribute earned income to a Roth IRA, and that's earned income. It was all earned income.
Would you still?
You could only turn back time.
If you could find a way. Are we quoting Cher now?
Find a way.
Oh boy, the show's really gone south now. When you say that, though, Paula, I mean, what do you think about Len's idea about investing in yourself at 17? That sounds like a cool idea.
See, the thing that I don't know is whether or not this particular 17-year-old wants to be an entrepreneur or wants to open a business. You can't teach somebody something that they don't want to learn. So if this person already has a natural interest in being an entrepreneur, then cool, let them pursue it. But if not, then, you know, you can't force somebody down that hole. But I think everybody can be served by having a retirement account. And let's not forget, the principal contributions to a Roth IRA can be withdrawn penalty-free at any point. So if the 17-year-old turns 30 and decides that she wants to withdraw that money to spend it as the down payment on a home, she could do that.
Awesome. Thanks for the question, Michelle. If you've got a question for the show, hit the top of our website, stackybenjamins.com. You'll see questions there. And we don't just answer wrong numbers, guys. We also get some mail. Believe it or not, somebody sends us letters. And today's letter comes to us from Bethany. She says, "Hey, Joe and OG, I've been working really hard to meet some basic financial goals. Happy to say that I have no debt, a $10,000 emergency fund, and I've started saving for retirement. I'm 27 years old, and I'm quite comfortable with an aggressive portfolio that at this point has $40,000 invested 100% in stocks. I also have a regular contribution of $1,000 a month to this account. Not interested in homeownership and do not plan on having children, both for a number of reasons, so the expenses associated with these will likely not apply to my life. My question is about deciding how much to save for retirement. I've calculated that if I continued to save the same amount, got an average annual return of 6%, I'd retire at 65 with just under $2 million. Also have a pension at work, but I don't want to rely on that. Who knows what'll happen in 38 years? I'm getting a raise at work, so could save even more for retirement, but also want to enjoy my life while I'm young. Trying to find some balance here. What would you do in my position? You know, Paula, once a blue moon ago, Len Penzo was young, so we'll go to him first. Len, if you could turn back time and find a way to be young again, what would you have done if you were in Bethany's spot?
I'll just tell you my experience. To me, 15% is plenty good for retirement. And that leaves enough for everything else in life. I think, you know, if you want to do more, great. You're going to retire. You'll be able to retire much quicker. But I think 15% is an excellent number.
So save that money toward having a life today.
Yeah. I mean, everybody wants to save for retirement. They want to have millions of dollars when they retire. But gosh darn it, when you're young, you can do so many things, right, that you can't do when you're older. So use some of that money while you're young and take advantage of your youth.
I'm disappointed you didn't push back on my old guy joke. I was really hoping for something back there. You didn't even give
it. I'm sorry. I couldn't focus on your.
Paula, what do you think? Should she save? You agree with Len?
Well, I don't see any problem with going hardcore and saving more. And I also, more broadly, want to make a distinction between enjoyment and spending. Yeah, I don't know what her hobbies are, but there are certainly many ways that you could enjoy your youth, enjoy being young, that don't really require spending a whole lot. So yeah, I say if you want to go hardcore and really ramp up the savings, do it. You can, and you know what? You can always just do it for a year or two and then scale back.
Well, let's go to the woman who does this for a living. What would you tell somebody like Bethany, who's off to such a great start?
Well, I would say congratulations, because I run across quite a few people that if they have a pension, they pretty much go, well, I'm going to be taken care of, and they don't really save anything outside of it. So I'm just all giddy and excited that this lady is saving $1,000 per month outside of her pension plan. Yay. Well, go you.
But is it go hard on it like Paula says, or are you more like Len? Let's talk about balance.
It just depends, because she said that she's putting $1,000 a month, but does this person make $30,000 or does this person make $150,000? So it's kind of a big difference. But if you're putting money into retirement and you're maxing out, you know, an IRA or a 403B or 401K or whatnot, you can always just put into a brokerage account, and then that money can be used for retirement, can be used before retirement. If you decide you're going to go on some big vacation around the world, you'd take it out for that if you want to. I feel like that's a good way to find a balance, because if you're chugging along and you're saving money, you know, put some into retirement for sure, but then put some into something that you can take out before 59 and a half.
Is she too young to do the heavy duty analysis of what really that $2 million is going to buy her with her lifestyle expectations?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of tell people between 10 to 20%, and it just depends on if you want to retire when you're in your mid 60s or if you're trying to retire when you're in your mid 50s. And if it's in your mid 50s, it needs to be closer to 20%. And if it's kind of normal retirement age, it'd probably be 10 to 15%. But no, I mean, compound interest, and the sooner you start, the better you are in the future. And you're not going to be one of those people that waits until mid 30s and goes, man, I wish I had done this 10 years ago, like a lot of people do.
Right. My uncle actually said that to me. We were talking about the stock market going down in 2000, 2001. We were at a funeral together for another uncle. And I said something about, wow, the stock market stinks. And he says, oh, yeah, I never did anything about that. He was getting ready to retire. And he was the guy you talk about, Katie, that just has a pension. And that was all he was going to do, was live on the pension. And now 17 years later, guess what he still does in his retirement? He still has a part-time job, not because he wants one. He has a part-time job because he didn't do any saving at all. So.
And you guys are talking about the stock market at a funeral?
Well, I never see the guy. And it's, yes. How about that? Yeah. Welcome to my family right there, Katie. There it is. Man. We find all the exciting topics.
You know, I own the domain strippersatmyfuneral.com.
Do you really?
I totally do.
What are we going to do with that, Paula? We need to figure out what we're going to do with that.
I was thinking that it could be the title of my memoir.
Oh, man. And on that note, you've dropped the mic twice now in the episode. So you got your money back. Paula, she dropped it twice. She got her money back on the insurance. Whoa. On the drop your mic insurance. How great
that
is it?
That means everyone buy microphone insurance.
Right. Thanks for the question, Bethany. If you've got a question for us, it's stackingbenjamins.com. And right there at the top, you'll see questions with a big old question mark. Click that and you'll have our voicemail, and you'll also have a place where you can write us letters. Thanks to everybody who's also given us reviews for the show. It's fantastic. This one's going on Mom's Fridge, guys. It says, and it doesn't have to be complicated. It says, should be top 10, 5 stars. This is by Boris BG. Says, great podcast, highly recommend. Bam, Boris BG dropped the mic. Now we got 3 mic drops in one episode. It's getting crazy. Thanks everybody who's done that. And if you could take a second and leave us a review, we'd very much appreciate it because it helps people learn what they're getting into. Guys, Katie, thanks a ton for joining us today.
You are most welcome. I'm sorry, that was Katie Brewer, the very, very special guest.
That's
right?
Exactly. Well, I was about to ask, what's going on at Your Richest Life Planning?
Yeah. So I just put out a couple of blog posts. One was on open enrollment, which hopefully people are getting about done with. Fun times of the year on open enrollment times, but also recently put one out on charitable giving, just because, you know, anytime that there's a tragedy, a lot of people kind of want to throw extra money at that. And a lot of times people are like, I don't do this very often. What should I look for?
And it's also that time of year when a lot of charitable organizations, people think about that at the end of the year too.
You know? Yeah. People are like, maybe I should give some money away. I don't know.
Yeah, good stuff. We'll link to that on our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Paula Pant, what the heck's going on at that crazy Afford Anything?
So on the Afford Anything podcast, I have an episode in which I release the talks that I gave both in Ecuador at the Financial Independence Retreat, as well as at FinCon in Dallas. So I've got both of those talks playing on the Afford Anything podcast. I also have several episodes in which I answer questions that have been submitted by listeners, including one episode that's entirely based on real estate questions and another that is just general personal finance questions. And speaking of charitable giving, I've got a couple of episodes lined up in the nearby future that are going to cover that as well.
That is awesome. We're all about charities. Len Penzo, tell me you're doing charitable giving as well, and we got the trifecta.
Of course, I'm always doing charitable giving. Yes, I am, Joe. Over on lenpenzo.com, by the way, I'm discussing the debate between using debit or credit when you go to pay for things.
The debate rages.
The debate does rage. And you know what the debate mainly is between? It's between the merchants and the consumers, because the merchants have a preference.
Katie, had my uncle and I not talked about stocks at a funeral, we would have talked about debit versus credit.
Yeah, that was next on the agenda of what to talk about at your uncle's funeral.
That was totally the next thing we were going to discuss. And then
fiduciary versus suitability was after that.
And whether we buy insurance on the iPhone. That's all we talk about. Yeah. Len, thanks a ton.
My pleasure.
All right, guys. We'll see everybody back here on Monday. Go stack some Benjamins. Bye-bye.
Yeah, sure thing, Joe. Why don't you get back to chiseling away at that gallon of ice cream? I'll tell everybody what we should have learned today. First, while the fiduciary rule is important, take it upon yourself to ask your help if they're a fiduciary. If they aren't, buyer beware. Second, take some advice from Kevin Yu at Pluto. By turning your saving strategy into a fun game, you'll get further ahead and enjoy the journey toward your goals. But the big lesson? Making a game out of your money is fun, unless you're playing against Joe's mom. That woman loves to take your cash at the checkers table. Would somebody king me, please? I need all the help I can get. Swear, this lady's like a checker shark. Special thanks to Katie Brewer for joining us today. You'll find out more about Katie at her website, yourrichestlifeplanning.com. Paula Pant appears courtesy of affordanything.com. And special thanks to Len Penzo from lenpenzo.com. This show was created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Kathleen Selmans handles design, newsletter, and classroom opportunities. If you'd like to learn more, head to stackingbenjamins.com/classes. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. Shannon Cowan is our community manager and social media guru. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I swear the worst part about coming over to Joe's mom's house is having to put on pants. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor.
Welcome to the after show, the part of the show that doesn't exist. Well, what happens in the after show stays in the after show. So we don't talk about the after show. And we often don't talk about money. But this week, I want to talk about something that we, Doug's Trivia Monday, guys, was about regifting. And I'm wondering, Katie Brewer, tell me that, have you been a victim of regifting?
I have been a perpetrator of regifting, Joe.
Of course you have been. Is that the sweater you gave me? Somebody gave to you first. Is that what you're trying to say?
Why are you saying it's really small for you?
Right. It's exactly it. I thought you just thought I liked my sweater tight.
No, I actually had a housewarming party where I invited a bunch of friends over. And whenever friends come over for housewarming parties, apparently they bring bottles of wine, which I didn't know, I guess. And if you don't tell them what type of wine that you bring, they bring whatever type of wine that they think that you like. So after probably several glasses of wine, one of my friends was leaving this party and I was like, hey, I know that you like red wine. You really should take this wine with you because I just really don't like red wine. And my husband was waving his arms at me and or giving me stink face. I don't know what he was doing, but he was trying to tell me to shut up and I didn't do it. And apparently it was the bottle of wine that that particular person had just given me for the housewarming gift.
Like an hour or two earlier.
Yeah, exactly. So essentially my regifting didn't even have a time frame on it. It was like a few hours later that I tried to regift the bottle of wine that someone had just given me.
Turn around and giving it back. Paul, I'm sure you've done something like that.
You know what? Honestly, Joe, I can't think of a single regifting story that I have. I mean, yeah, geez.
Would you regift the red wine like Katie did?
I can't imagine not liking red wine.
That's right. You lost your Katie in red
just
wine.
I'll mail the red wine to Paula next time.
Perfect.
That's funny. Len Penzo, you've been told a regifting story in a long time.
Yes. You know, my most famous one is we had a Christmas party one year. And we asked all the guests to bring a gift and we have a gift exchange. And it turned out that, you know, and everybody opened the gifts in front of everybody. And it turned out that one of the gifts that one of my guests opened that somebody else had brought you know, because what you do is you take the gifts and you put them under the tree and everybody gets to pick a gift. Anyways, this person picked the gift under the tree. They opened it up and it was a Mr. T coffee maker.
Awesome. Tea maker,
right? Really cool. So they were like, oh, and they got excited and they opened up the lid. And inside the lid, as soon as they lifted it up, there was a card. Oh, how thoughtful that is. It's very thoughtful. Somebody, they not only brought a gift for exchange, they put a card in the Mr. T, which was a surprise to everybody. So they opened the envelope up, and it was a wedding gift card. Congratulations on your wedding. It turns out the person that brought the gift, it was a wedding gift, and the wedding gift, it was like 10 years old. They had it in their closet. They never even opened the Mr. T up. So they had no idea that these people had given them a card
from the wedding. Oh, how awkward is that?
Yeah, that was really wild. It was actually quite funny. Everybody was just busting a gut, man. It was funny.
And did the people ever live that down?
No, they have not to this day. No.
I like how you tell that story in the third person. Don't you like that, Paula? How Len talks about the fact that it wasn't him. He tries to play it off like it wasn't him.
It's so funny that these people did that.
That's right. Everybody laughed. Nobody took it personally. They thought it was hilarious.
I switch between first and third person more than you might realize. Right. I guess that joke would be I switch between first and second more than you might realize. Duh.
Can you imagine if there was money? It would be first and second, wouldn't it?
I know. You'd be like, give me back that mug.
Right. No, worse yet, if there was a check.
Yeah.
That would just suck. All right, guys. Thanks for playing.
Oh, gee, I know you're already a member, but I wonder if the rest of our audience knows that becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you save and earn more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you could start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal's savings option for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project, maybe you want to consolidate debt. You could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed-rate home equity loan with zero closing costs, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Both options could help make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.